One revelation that kind of was thrust upon me when we came here 6 years ago now is that Northeast Ohio loves it some Halloween. I mean, Cuyahoga Falls definitely loves it some Halloween. In all the places that we've lived, from middle south of Florida to being born and raised in Nashville, I've never experienced an area that loves it some Halloween like Northeast Ohio loves it some Halloween. It was just one of those things. It was an awakening to me about the joy and the fun and the excitement and the over kind of things that happen on Halloween. The overdone it, I guess, is what you could say. I mean, they just overdo it, but it's everywhere. And that was just kind of a revelation to me. So to get things started, I'm going to do my own top seven fun facts about Halloween. If I had this kind of game show type of music, I would have played it, but I spared you from that. So we're going to get things started with top seven fun facts about Halloween that will involve audience participation. Otherwise, it's just me reading blanket statements from Google. And there's nothing fun about me just reading blanket statements from Google. So candy corn was originally called what? Say, that's bad? Bad, John. All right. I don't like candy corn either, but there may be somebody in here who is sensitive to the goodness of candy corn. Candy corn was called what? Chicken feed. I knew Brent. Of all people, I knew Brent would get it. Candy corn was originally called chicken feed, which makes sense. I mean, there's this revelation about that. All right, the first jack-o'-lanterns were originally made from what? Turnips. Oh, my goodness. Ireland. Oh, Ireland. Ah, okay. All right, so if you did not know that, jack-o'-lanterns originally came from turnips. Aren't you glad they went to pumpkins? Halloween is the, if you kind of look at this numerical-wise, is the blank highest grossing commercial holiday after, all right, Christmas is in, so it is the second highest grossing commercial holiday after Christmas. Anybody want to take a stab at how much money was kind of spent on Halloween 2018? Too much. Anybody want to take a stab? Just throw a number out there. $9 billion in 2018. $9 billion. Anybody want to take a stab at how much was spent on candy? $20 million. $2.6 billion was spent on candy in 2018. The largest pumpkin ever measured weighed what? All right, we got 600. 890. We're going 1,000. Going 1,000. 1,200. That'd be, man. 836 pounds. Largest pumpkin ever measured. All right, for you math folks, I think you'll appreciate this. What do you get if you divide the circumference of a jack-o'-lantern by its diameter? Boo, pumpkin pie. Pumpkin pie. All right. Black and orange are typically associated with Halloween colors. Anybody want to take a stab at what the symbol of orange means? Orange is a symbol for for broken hearts and unmet expectations. Also the Cleveland Browns as well. Broken hearts and unmet expectations. Orange is a symbol of strength and endurance. And because orange is a symbol of endurance, throughout the rest of the sermon, all the letters are going to be in orange. So just, you're going to endure through this sermon. I guess I'll make it worth this, the color of it. All right. Average bag of candy that one child will collect on Halloween contains about how many calories? We got 11,000 calories. That's why on November 1st you put them kids on some type of elliptical or some type of, you take them on a 5K, you do something. because they got calories to burn. We are going to talk about the Bible, just to let you know. Our main text this morning is going to be in Ezekiel 37. So if you have a Bible, I would encourage you to go ahead and turn to Ezekiel 37. Halloween was always kind of a fun type of experience for me growing up. I don't know about your guys' experience with Halloween, but Halloween was always fun for me. And I've come to see it as a missional opportunity as well. If you haven't had an opportunity to read the front article of the bulletin, I very much encourage you to do so. It was a very good article that Keeley found regarding kind of a missional approach to Halloween and how we view this kind of day. It's not a holiday. It's just an event that Americans and other people around the world participate in. And there can be a missional output to it, because it's really the only day during the year where you get to see a vast majority of your neighbors. You get to see them, and you not only see them, but meet them and speak to them. So it can be an opportunity to bless your neighbors. It can be an opportunity to share with your neighbors. And you can put encouraging things in little bags of candy that you put together. Words of encouragement, words of love. There is a missional approach to Halloween. But with that, this time of year, I'm often reminded of some of the spooky stories in the Gospels. If you don't think the Gospels have spooky stories, maybe this may be a little helpful to you. There are some spooky type of scenes within the Gospel stories. One of the ones that come to mind this time of year is in Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. I'm not going to read the entire story, but just sense this scene. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been chained hand and foot. But he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. So this scene becomes eerie right from the get-go. You have this guy that is demon-possessed who lives in the tombs. This is bonfire-ready story. Thank you, Mark, and thank you, Peter, for providing this. I mean, this is one of those stories that you read at night to draw your imagination in, and it just reads. The story is quite powerful, actually. Move over a chapter in Mark chapter 6, verses 45 through 42. You get this crazy scene of Jesus walking out on the water. And as he's coming towards his disciples, they get scared because they think Jesus is a ghost. Now, the Greek word there is spirit. But it gives this impression of some apparition coming towards them. Again, one of those spooky type of stories. You could almost see the mist and the fog over the water as Jesus is approaching them. There's this spooky type of sense to it. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, this text isn't so much spooky as it is just kind of get in your face type of reality. Matthew 10, 28, do not be afraid of those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. The Greek word there for hell is Gehenna, which takes us back to 2 Chronicles 28:3 and 2 Chronicles 33:6 of this awful place that some of the kings of Israel participated in pagan worship there that would involve child sacrifice. So it is this dark, evil, evil place. It's called the Valley of Ben-Hinnom, which gets translated in the Greek in the New Testament, referring to hell as Gehenna. So when Jesus talks about this dark, evil place, he points back to a physical place that they would have very much been aware of. It's a place where parents, if you knew your kids were out running around, it's one of the things, don't go there. That's a place you do not go to. Don't go there. Stay away from there. There's this crazy, evil, spooky type of atmosphere. In Jeremiah chapter 7, the Valley of Ben-Hinnom, Gehenna, has its name changed to the Valley of Slaughter, which just kind of gives it a little bit of, in other words, what I want you guys to see very quickly is the Bible is not boring. The Bible is filled with all types of different genres and all types of different stories that can grab our imagination and captivate us and draw us in, even during a particular event in our American calendar. The Bible is not boring. Which takes us to another story that I would like to draw our attention to this morning. Ezekiel chapter 37. We're going to be looking at verses 1 through 14. But this text follows some of my own personal favorites of all the promises in the biblical narrative. And I didn't put this text on the screen, for I want you not just to see it, I want you to hear it. Ezekiel chapter 36, beginning in verse 22. Therefore say to the house of Israel, therefore say to God's people, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. It is not for your sake, O people of God, that I am going to do these things, but for the sake of my holy name, which you have profaned among the nations where you have gone. I will show the holiness of my great name, which has been profaned among the nations, the name you have profaned among them. Then the nations will know that I am the Lord, declares the Sovereign Lord, when I am proved holy through you before their eyes. There's missional language in here of the nations knowing the Lord. The nations knowing the Lord. For I will take you out of the nations. I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back into your own land. I will sprinkle clean water on you and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all your impurities and from all your idols. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. And I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I will give you a heart that cares, a heart that beats. And I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees and be careful to keep my laws. If 27 could be a life verse, if Ezekiel 36, 27 could be a missional statement for us, I would encourage it to be. I will put my spirit in you and move you. Move you. Wherever you're at, whatever your day-to-day looks like, my spirit is in you to move you, to direct you, to send you out. And what follows into chapter 37 is the Lord takes Ezekiel into a graveyard. This text was made for Halloween. I don't know if you guys can buy it or not. But the Lord takes Ezekiel into a graveyard. Ezekiel chapter 37, beginning in verse 1. The hand of the Lord was on me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me in the middle of a valley. It was full of bones. He led me back and forth among them, and I saw a great many bones on the floor of the valley, bones that were very dry. And he asked me, Son of man, can these bones live? I said, Sovereign Lord, you alone know. Then he said to me, prophesy to these bones and say to them, dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the Sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath, or I will make spirit, because the word for breath and spirit are interchangeable within the Old Testament. It can be both. I will make breath. I will make spirit come into them. Enter you, and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you and make flesh come upon you and cover you with skin. I will put my breath in you. I will put my spirit in you, and you will come to life. Then and only then will you know that I am the Lord. That is powerful language, church. Not only is it poetic, but it is strong language. Because God is in the resurrection business. God is in the business of bringing dead people to life. Not just making bad people better. God is in the resurrection business of bringing dead people to life. God takes Ezekiel to the middle of a graveyard and he says to him, "This is what my people look like. Dim bones, dim bones. This is what my people look like." He wants Ezekiel to see and to feel the deadness of his people. You guys get the imagery here that the Lord is taking Ezekiel and he's walking him back and forth among and around this graveyard of dead bones that represents his people? Back and forth he takes Ezekiel. He wants Ezekiel to see and he wants Ezekiel to feel the deadness of his people. And before he sends Ezekiel out, first God desires Ezekiel to feel the weight of what has happened to his people. To feel their dryness, to feel their hopelessness. What he's really offering Ezekiel is a chance to care. He offers Ezekiel a chance to actually care. He walks Ezekiel around. He says, "Can't you see the deadness? Can't you see the dryness? Can't you see the hopelessness that exists within my people? Ezekiel, do you care? Do you care?" The physical dryness of the bones is a clear connection to the spiritual condition of their hearts. There is this spiritual lifelessness that is going on within God's people. They are dry bones, dead bones. Ezekiel, can these bones come back to life? Ezekiel, can God's people rise up and come back to life? Ezekiel, can humanity? Ezekiel, can my family? Can my marriage? Can my faith? Can my co-workers? Can my students? Can my neighbors come back to life? Ezekiel, do you care about dead people coming back to life? Ezekiel, do you care? And this is what he tells Ezekiel. "Speak these words of encouragement and life to my people. Rise up. Rise up, people of God. Rise up, sons and daughters of God. Rise up. Be filled with my breath. Be filled with my spirit. I will fill you with my breath and you will live. For without the Spirit of God, there is no life." There is no life. It's just dead bones. It's just dry. There is no hope. There is no life outside of the Spirit of God living in us. Then and only then will the promises of all promises come to be. They, you and I and our neighbors will know the Lord. And will know the Lord. That is the promises of all promises when the Spirit of the living God indwells us. We will know the Lord. And that is God's hope for not just church folk. That is God's hope and that is God's telos. That's God's direction for all of humanity. That they would come to know the Lord. So rise up, people of God. Rise up. The connection between life and knowing the Lord cannot ever be overstated. The connection between life and knowing the Lord can never be overstated. It simply cannot. Picking up in verse 7. So I prophesied as I was commanded. And as I was prophesying, there was a noise, a rattling sound, and the bones came together, bone to bone. I looked, and tendons and flesh appeared on them, and skin covered them, but there was no spirit in them. There was no breath in them. These two sentences, these two verses caught my attention well this week as I was putting this together. Walking zombies is what we have here. I told you, this text is for Halloween. My goodness. Walking zombies. People, including God's people, walking around, going through the motions week in and week out with no awareness that they are not fully complete. Walking around incomplete. They have all the physicalities of a body. They got the dress. They got the look, but they have no spirit in them. They have no breath in them. How many of you would be honest with yourself before the Lord? Say, I see me in 7 and 8. I'm not just pointing my finger at my neighbors or somebody else that I know, but 7 and 8 is me. I'm dressed, I'm here. But I'm not so sure I've got the Spirit in me. Even though I've been baptized, even though I've got all of these promises that have been given to me in Scripture, my heart, my soul feels dry. I don't have the fire. I don't have the passion. I don't care. And it's more than just apathy that's going on here. Ezekiel is pointing to dead. To dead. It's reason chapter 36. I will give you a new heart. I will put my spirit in you. It's full body, full heart cavity type of surgery going on here. And then chapter 7 says, come to life. Without my breath in you, without my spirit in you, people of God, you're as good as dead. You could have all the parts put together, but you're as good as dead. Picking up in verse 9. Then he said to me again, prophesy to the breath. Prophesy, son of man, and say to it, this is what the sovereign Lord says, come, breath, come, Spirit, from the four winds, and breathe into these slain that they may live. So I prophesied as he commanded me, and breath entered them. They came to life and stood up on their feet, a vast army. Can you guys imagine this scene taking place? Can you put yourself in Ezekiel's spot and just experience and see this taking place before you? It's an amazing story. Amazing story. The connection between caring and obeying and God answering and God moving is absolutely convicting. Come, breath. Come, spirit. It's like God is inviting Ezekiel to tell God to do something. God is inviting Ezekiel to tell part of the Trinity to come and do something. Come, breath. Come, spirit. The Lord is telling Ezekiel to tell God to come and to awaken this people. Wake them up. Rise up, sons and daughters. Rise up. Come, Holy Spirit. And God answers with an astounding, yes, I will come, and life is coming with me. Yes, I will rise up my people. Yes, I will raise them from their deadness. Yes, I will give them hope, because there's still hope. Come, Holy Spirit, and rise up God's people. God gives Ezekiel permission to tell God to send His Spirit to raise His people from the dead. Rise up, people of God. Church, we have a message of hope and life that is unlike anything else this world has to offer. When you look at our story, when you look at the message of hope and life and purpose and identity that we have in our story, it is unlike anything else this world has to offer. In fact, there is nothing else close to it. We have a hope and a purpose like nothing else. And for the most part, we keep it to ourselves. For the most part, we internalize it. For the most part, we've let culture box it in to where it's safe to talk about it here. It's okay to talk about it in here. But don't you dare bring your religion to me outside of these walls. And for some good reason, because there have been a lot of bad experiences that people have had with church folk. But just because those bad experiences exist doesn't get us the permission to still not tell our story. To tell not still why the hope that we have. We have a story of life and hope and purpose, and for the most part, we keep it to ourselves. We keep it to ourselves. Maybe we're scared and intimidated that we might say the wrong things. Maybe we're scared and intimidated that we don't know enough Bible. Maybe we're scared and intimidated that it will become awkward and uncomfortable, so we wait for the perfect opportunity that never, ever, ever seems to come. Maybe we wait and wait for that connection to come, but that connection just never seems to come, so we wait and we wait and we wait and we wait. And we don't speak up. We don't speak up. And then we read this text in Ezekiel 37. The Lord takes Ezekiel into the middle of a graveyard, and He says, "Do you want to join with me in what I am doing? Because I'm in the resurrection business. Son of man, Ezekiel, do you want to join with me in what I am doing? Do you want to join me?" He takes His messenger, if you will. And Jesus does this as well. In Matthew chapter 10, verses 7 through 8, that'll be on the screen. As you go, as Jesus sends out His disciples, His first ones, as He sends them out, He says to them, "As you go, proclaim this message. The kingdom of heaven has come near. The rule and reign of God has come near. Good news. God is not done yet. The rule and reign of God has come near. So heal the sick. Raise the dead. Cleanse those who have leprosy. Drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give." How many dead people in this room has God raised? I can't be the only one. I don't think there's a single one of us who have not confessed Jesus as King and Lord should not be raising our hand saying, "God has raised me from the dead." And the message that Jesus gives His followers is, "You go and join me in raising people from the dead. You go and bring life to dead places. You speak words of life and hope into dead people." Ezekiel. Ezekiel. In Luke chapter 10, Jesus states some very similar things. Luke chapter 10 will be on the screen as well. "After this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two ahead of Him to every town and place where He was about to go. He told them, 'The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few.'" The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Come, breath. Come, spirit. Rise up. Go. I am sending you like lambs among wolves. Jesus never said it would be easy. Jesus never said it would not be awkward or uncomfortable. Because it is. It is. When you get into real conversations with your neighbors and with your family and with your coworkers and with your friends, it can be uncomfortable and it can be difficult. And Jesus told us it would. Go. I am sending you out like lambs among wolves. And then in 8 and 9, Jesus says this. When you enter a town and are welcomed, eat what is offered to you. Welcome the hospitality. Heal the sick who are there and tell them the kingdom of God has come near to you. The good news that God is not done has come near to you. The good news of the rule and reign of God has come near to you. In Ezekiel 37, God is taking his messenger. He's offering his messengers as I'm staring at a bunch of Ezekiels, including myself. He takes his messengers into the middle of a graveyard with a message of hope for the spiritual condition of a people that is worse than they could possibly ever imagine, but with a message of good, good news that God is not done with them. There is hope. There is hope. This radical command, he takes Ezekiel to the middle of a graveyard with a bunch of bones and says, speak to these dead objects. Rise. This radical command is a radical opportunity that can lend itself, at least for us, to be a radical obedience that God will follow through with his promise. Ezekiel was not by himself in that graveyard. In no way, shape, form, or fashion was he alone. And it had nothing to do with Ezekiel's eloquence. It had nothing to do with Ezekiel's style. It had nothing to do with Ezekiel's personality. This is about Ezekiel's obedience to God's promises, and watch what God does. Picking up in verse 11. Then he said to me, Son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. Son of man, these bones are my people. They say our bones are dried up and our hope is gone. We are cut off. Therefore prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. My people, I am going to open your graves and bring you up from them. I will bring you back to the land of Israel. Then you, my people, will know that I am the Lord when I open your graves and bring you up from them. Then I will put my spirit in you and you will live. And I will settle you in your own land. Then you will know that I, the Lord, have spoken. I have done it, declares the Lord. The imagery here, I hope you can hear baptism. Dying, raising to new life. I hope you can see God's direction for the end of all things and the new heavens and the new earth, when everyone will be raised. What that's going to look like, I don't know, but I think it's going to be really cool when it happens. If God can speak all of existence, I think God can raise a few billions of people. There's something powerful going on here in the imagery that's carried over into the New Testament and into our lives speaks that this text is real. This text is real. Their sins have not outrun God's grace. Their disappointment has not outrun God's power or God's purpose and plan. God says, "Here I am, ready to do something new among the people." And he looks at Ezekiel and he says, "Do you want to join in what I am doing? Do you want to join in with what I am doing? I will put my spirit in you, and I will move you to be my person, to be my people." Ezekiel 36 says, "I will put a new heart in you. I will put my spirit in you and move you to a people, to a person who has lost hope, to tell them, to tell him, to tell her some really, really good news. God is not done. God is not done. There is hope. So rise up, people of God. Rise up, sons and daughters of the resurrected King. Rise up. Be filled with the Spirit. Dim bones, come back to life." Jared, you can come on up, buddy. Each week we have an invitation song. And I don't know where all of you are at this morning in your walk with faith. I don't know where you're at in your spiritual connection with Jesus. I simply don't know. But you have two opportunities to respond this morning in somewhat of a public manner. The first response is if you would like to come forward and receive the prayers of the church. That is an opportunity that we offer each and every single Sunday. We also have an opportunity in our prayer room as well. Our shepherds will be in the back, willing and eager and able to pray with anyone who would like to be prayed for. And then you have a third option, and that is to respond where you're at. During this invitation song, I challenge you and I encourage you to take spiritual inventory of where you're at. Because there's not a moment in our lives where we don't have seasons where we feel like we're dead. We got 7 and 8 down. We're clothed. We're here. But there's something missing inside of us. There's a deadness to our souls. There's a deadness to our hearts. There's a deadness to our spirit that we can't really explain, but we know it's there. And there's an opportunity that you may have to respond before the Lord saying, "Raise me up, God. Come, Holy Spirit, fill me. Because I don't want to be dead anymore. I don't want to not care anymore. I want to care. So raise me up. Raise me up. Raise me up." However you need to respond, please do so at this time as together we stand and sing.